You've heard today's guest, Joe Lample of joegardener.com, on multiple episodes on how-to garden topics like seed starting, fall gardening, vegetable gardening, but today, he joins us for a what not to do episode. As we gear up for gardening season, Joe and I huddled together to review the common mistakes that we see our communities make. I first thought that this episode would be geared for beginner gardeners, but I realized after talking with Joe, these mistakes can happen for people in their first year of gardening or in their 40th year of gardening. As you're about to hear, Joe, the go-to garden expert, is even making mistakes in his garden this season. He shares, I share, we're all sharing. Because listen, we all make mistakes. Mistakes, or what I like to call plant fails, are arguably the most important moment for gardeners because we learn from our mistakes and grow and become better gardeners for them. So, Joe and I put together this episode to hopefully save you some heartache as we call out common mistakes and diagnose how to avoid them. Welcome back. Welcome to the Growing Joy podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives. I'm Maria, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, an epic plant killer turned happy plant lady. On Growing Joy, you'll find conversations about plant care, plant community, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Self-care on Growing Joy, the podcast.
Hello, plant friends. I hope you've had beautifully planty weeks. I am ironically recording this episode about gardening in the midst of getting 2 feet of snow in the Catskills. It's not spring quite yet, but boy, am I ready for it to warm up and start my balcony garden again. I seriously had the best memories last summer, sitting on my balcony at my table amidst so many cosmos and dahlias, eating dinner with Billy, a dinner of a salad made of homegrown lettuce and tomatoes. Growing my own food has just been one of the most empowering experiences. Until spring, I have been enjoying my indoor hydroponic lettuce grow farm stand. I'm sure if you follow me on Instagram, you've seen it. I'm growing Territorial Seed Company's kitchen counter collection. So I'm growing six-inch tomato plants and the cutest little mini cucumbers you've ever seen. So it's helping ward off my gardener's itch, but I'm really excited to get to the outdoor gardening season because there's just nothing like a hot spring or summer evening looking at your plants and their growth. So today's episode's a little different. It's a what not to do episode. It's so fun. Joe gives so much useful information in it. And I just wanted to let you know, you're going to hear at the end of the episode, Joe announces his newest course, Organic Vegetable Gardening, otherwise known as OVG. But Joe has extended a special discount for our community, 20% off the course, which is incredible. The discount expires April 4th. So if you're interested, you know, you might be like me and you just take every course Joe's ever created, no matter what the topic, because you know how great his classes are. And if you just want to go buy it right now, just make sure you use GROW20, GROW20 at checkout for 20% off. But Joe's going to share a lot more about it at the end of the episode. But before we talk about the course, we've got to get to the top gardening mistakes Joe and I see in our community and what Joe and I have committed in our own gardens and how to avoid them. Let's welcome back a beloved Growing Joy guest, Joe Lample. Joe, welcome back so soon.
It's always good to be back. Just seems like yesterday, and that's a good thing.
I know. People started seeds with you and me, and now they're going to start gardening with you and me, right?
It's like we're
just nurturing them along the path.
Yeah, they're stuck with us now because it's all downhill really from here, but we're off to a good start.
Exactly. At the time of this interview, I am recovering from bronchitis. So if I sound a little weird, listeners, it's because I didn't sound like anything this morning. So, Joe, I've been on vocal rest up until this moment where I get to talk to Joe so I could get through this interview. Wow. But I knew that I needed to do this interview with you, Joe, because you're hard to get. You're a busy man, and we need to dive into a lot of gardening talk, but more specifically gardening mistakes, because what is like the worst? I mean, how many people do you know? I'm one of them. You know, it was with houseplants, but I made mistakes caring for houseplants, labeled myself a plant killer, and then never did it, never tried again for years and years. And I feel like so many people try to garden, fail, and then never give it a second thought.
And you know what, Maria? That's a great place to start, I think, because there are a lot of future gardeners out there that haven't started yet because they're afraid to fail. They are afraid they don't know where to begin. And if they do start, they're going to screw up or mess up. And they don't want to do that. But I'm telling you and everybody listening right now, the only way that you're going to learn is to start. You cannot become a gardener until you start to garden. Why put those expectations on yourself that you're going to know how to do everything right from the start? You can't. And I will tell you this too, and this goes to the people that have been literally gardening all their lives and they're way older than me. And that is, no matter how much you know about gardening, there's always more to learn. You're never going to know it all. But the only way to start learning is to start gardening. So you started, and then, you know, you just need to keep plugging at it. And you have, and you ventured out into outdoor stuff now. And look at you.
Look at me. But also, newsflash, you're also always going to fail. Like, you're always going to make mistakes. And I would bet, Joe, that you've probably made a mistake this year in your umpteenth year of gardening.
I love it.
Right?
I love making mistakes. I love it because I call them learning opportunities, you know? It's good to make mistakes if you take what happened and try to figure out why it happened so that you know how to not make that happen again. That's a learning opportunity right there. And I embrace them. I look for them. And when they happen, it makes me happy.
Yeah. Do you have a recent example in your garden of a mistake that really helped you, you know, with the entire future garden?
Yeah. It's a mistake that I noticed this weekend, and it's regarding seedlings. And I'm really good at starting seeds. And in this case, I can't say that it's directly related to something that I did, but it is something that I noticed because of what I know from the past that was a mistake that we need to not repeat again. And that is this: I have my farm manager and my daughter helping me sow seeds right now because we're just so busy and we have so many to sow. And so we tend to, as one technique that you can do, it's called the dense planting technique, but you take a lot of seeds and you put them into a small pot to start, and they all will germinate in that small pot with the intention of then dividing them about 4 weeks later into their own pots. But it's a huge space saver and time saver early on because, you know, it's very efficient. But what happens, and here's where the mistake happens, you can sow a lot of seeds in a small pot, but you can't sow too many. And if you sow too many and all those seeds start to sprout, they're all competing with each other for light. And as they're all growing up at the same time, they're all looking for that same light, but not all of them can access the direction of the light at the same time based on where they are located in the pot. And so they end up all being very leggy. I mean, if you provide them a good growing environment, they're doing great. So they're like competing to get up there to the light, and it makes them leggier and leggier. And so now the reason we're so busy at this moment is we're triage right now because they're getting too leggy too fast. And we got to get them out of those pots a week before they're really strong enough to do that, because otherwise they're going to stretch even more. And you don't want that. You want compact, tight, robust seedlings, which is normally what we would do, but I did not instruct my team to not sow too many, and that's where the communication failed. I need to remind them of that because that's a mistake, and we're trying to save it with thousands of seedlings.
So the lesson learned is, when intense planting, don't plant too many. Is there a rule of thumb for intense planting that you can go by just for people who use that method?
There's not a rule of thumb that I know of because, well, let's just say that, but in a 4-inch pot, which is what we have, a little 4-inch square pot, you can sow maybe up to 25 seeds. And I think that we were probably sowing closer to 50 in one. I was not there to see how many were getting sown. And so that's what happened. But it's an important lesson that can, if anybody can learn from what we just said right now, you'll hear about the dense planting method and it's very appealing, but you just got to know when to stop. You know, there's only so many that they can handle in a space.
Totally. And another lesson too is to constantly be checking in on those seedlings, because you needed to be interacting with them to even catch, oh my God, these are getting leggy, you know, before it was too late.
Yes. And they were growing so fast and it was so dense. It was just like, yeah, this is good. But day to day, they were, I mean, really growing fast. And I just chalked it up to the greenhouse environment, you know, the good sun, the warm environment. And I'm like, yeah, they love it here. Next thing I know, I turn my back for a day and it's like, oh, these things are getting leggy. And then I realized, I started looking at everything and I said, oh my God, we got to get on these right now. So that's the other thing. Pay attention to your plants. That is one mistake that a lot of us make. We don't get out there often enough. And you know, how often enough as often as you can. And twice a day is good, you know?
Plants are not a set it and forget it moment.
No, especially in the young stages. The juvenile vigor is intense.
Yeah. I'm growing from seed. After our seed starting episode, I got super excited. I'm growing. I have a hydroponic indoor gardening setup. And I went in and I started a bunch of micro dwarf tomatoes.
The micro dwarfs.
Yeah, micro dwarf tomatoes and salad and stuff.
And that's a set it and forget it, as you can bet, because with hydroponics, you refill the water once a week. But, you know, I had to thin the seedlings because I started a couple of seeds in each plug. I noticed that, you know, the different plugs were shading each other out because some were growing faster than others. So, you know, I was there every other day, if not every day. I do yoga right next to it, so it's convenient that I've spent time looking in that direction. But yeah, no, seedlings are definitely the high maintenance. You know, they're young kiddos. You need to look after young kiddos more than larger established plants.
This is right. Yeah, because there's a lot of it's under your control while they're in those little containers before they get planted outside.
Totally. And I guess also, even if you're buying seedlings at the store pre-grown and you're transplanting them, it's those first couple of weeks that you're also making sure that those transplants get established, that they don't get over or underwater, that the roots are taking in, right?
Yeah, because they can't get up and move. So it's up to you to make sure that, you know, you've put them in the right place and they're getting the water that they need, the light that they need, you know, doing your homework to know where that appropriate place is. And then once they settle in, you can take a breath. So
yeah.
Not that
finally.
Bad. Yeah.
So we're nowhere near taking a breath. This episode comes out at the end of March. You know, for most of us, at least if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, sorry, Australian listeners, but our gardener's itch, we are very itchy. We are, you know, jonesing. Most of us have probably started seeds or we've at least gotten our seeds and we're planting our gardens. So I thought it would be fun for us. You know, you've been on the show multiple times doing these kind of how-to episodes, but I was thinking, what if we like process the biggest gardening mistakes and rectify them in this conversation? So as people prepare for their gardens, let's talk about what not to do.
Okay.
I'll throw myself under the bus. You throw yourself under the bus. Also just from, you know, stories of friends and so many common things that we both hear in our communities. And I think, you know, especially for newer gardeners, there are so many mistakes that every single gardener makes, right? In those first couple of years, because you don't know what you don't know, right? I always say that on the show, like, you don't know what you don't know. So why would you know that you have to prune or that you have to water every day? Like, why would you know that if you've never done this before?
Yeah, it's very profound, that statement.
So I'm going to hit you up with different gardening mistakes that I see. Either I've pulled them or I looked at your website. I know you have a couple of blogs on gardening mistakes. And then let's talk through it. The first one, and I know that this is the timing of this is perfect, forgetting to plan. Let's do a deep dive into garden planning right now. We're at this cusp where it might not be too late if you haven't started planning your garden yet. What are the biggest mistakes in the planning area that you see, and what are some recommendations that you would offer?
You know, you said as the mistake, it's forgetting to plan, or some people just don't even think about the need to plan. So it's not as though they're forgetting, they just never thought about it. It's like they, like you just said, you don't know what you don't know. And you do need to know that planning is very important. I often describe it as when I ask a question of somebody, I said, are you a planner or a planter? And I'll stop and think about that for a second. And then it hits them. Oh, yeah, I just go out there and plant. I don't really think about where I'm going to put it or the conditions that it needs, or will that plant even grow in the environment that I have? Or when should I be planting this? You know, what is there a time of year where this is appropriate? And all these things. So planning will prevent a lot of mistakes and save a lot of your plants by thinking in advance where they need to go. And if it's an edible, you need to be actually thinking out longer term than just this year with edibles, because there's this concept called crop rotation. And in the perfect world, we take those edible family of crops like tomatoes and we move them to a different location the next time we plant them the following year. Because if we keep planting edibles from the same family in the same place year after year, diseases build up in the soil that attack that plant. But by denying those diseases the opportunity of a continuous feeding by putting those same family members in that place, we can starve out that disease. So even thinking longer term, but back to short term, here we are, Maria, we were having this conversation off air just a second ago. It's like a freight train right now. This time of year, for gardeners who haven't felt this yet, once you get into this, you realize that there is a lot going on right as we come into spring. You know, if you're a seed starter, you got to plan ahead to know that you need to start your seeds in wintertime sometime so they have time to grow so that you can plant them out when the risk of frost passes. And if you haven't thought about that, maybe you haven't started your seeds yet, or maybe you started them too early, and then that can be a problem too. So The list goes on and on, but planning has everything to do with gardening success. The best time to plan with gardening is when it's quiet, which is basically, you know, late fall to early winter when there really isn't a lot going on gardening-wise. It makes total sense to do your planning and think ahead so that when that season does come around, you are ready to hit the ground running and you feel confident, you don't feel overwhelmed or stressed out, and everything works so much more smoothly that way.
So what does planning mean to you? What does that look like for you?
I know what I'm going to grow. I know when I'm going to start it. I know when I'm going to plant it outside. I know where I'm going to plant it and where not to plant it is just going back to that crop rotation reference. And for example, this year, we're adding a lot of flowers around the interior perimeter of my raised bed garden. We built more beds. And so we had to think about, okay, we need to fill them with soil. Where do we get our soil? How much soil do we need? What flowers are we going to plant there? And with the flowers that we're going to plant, where's the best location for each of those types of flowers? Because some are taller than others, and we don't want those in front of the shorter ones because they'll get shaded out. Which ones are deer resistant? So we can be a little lax on maybe spreading some outside the fence. A lot of nuances on the particulars of that. So that was a lot right there. And that's just in the vegetable slash now flower garden.
Are you starting with like a diagram of whatever garden you've got in terms of how many beds you have, whatever your a diagram with like a sketch of, okay, this is best case scenario, what I want it to look like. And then you're kind of working back from that.
We, Toby, my farm manager, thank goodness, did a major spreadsheet with a diagram and the beds drawn out on the spreadsheet and color coded and calculated the amount of flowers that we need in each one, when we need to plant them. We have a seed planting succession chart that we started to know what seeds should have been planted by now, what ones plant next, and you know, going on out through the season. Which ones will we direct sow into the garden beds versus starting them ahead of time and indoors or in the greenhouse? So it can sound overwhelming, but at the volume of things that we're growing, it would get out of hand without planning. But even if you scale that back to a first-time gardener, somebody that's just, you know, dipping their toe in the water, I may have just made it sound like totally intimidating, but that's only because of the volume that we do. But even on a small scale, thinking ahead to as to the timing and the location and the plant requirements. Because remember, we already said, plant can't get up and move itself once you put it in the ground. So you need to be thinking about its needs to set it up for success before that day comes.
Yeah, it's funny listening to you because I'm like, yeah, Joe needs spreadsheets. Joe needs like a full Google Suite, like account just to manage this. But it takes me back to my first garden, which was a 9-square-foot balcony in New York City. I had, I think, 10 pots on it, but my garden planning for that, because this was also peak COVID, so I was losing my mind. So that planning of that tiny balcony garden was actually like what kept me holding on in COVID, in the pandemic. You actually featured the garden on Growing a Greener World.
Yeah.
So whenever my mom moves, she makes like small charts of each room and then scales it down. She takes graph paper. So I made a small scale of my balcony. And then I made tiny cutouts of all of the different pots that I had. And I moved the pots around to try and figure out how I could get the most pots in. And then I had a plan for each pot.
Oh, wow.
I only had 10, right? So like that was super easy. And then, you know, just for other smaller space gardeners who maybe don't need spreadsheets the way Joe does, you can start simple like that with just a small little diagram and then say, okay, I need 2 containers of tomatoes. Okay, what are the 2 best tomatoes that are going to suit these 2 containers? Maybe I want an indeterminate and a determinate, or maybe I want a cherry tomato and a Roma tomato. Then you figure out the seeds, and then you figure out the planting, your frost date, you plan back from that. So you need like a diagram and something to write in. You need 2 pages. I mean, you can do it all in a journal, which is what I did. One year I used Territorial Seeds. There are so many garden planners online that you can use, but Territorial Seed Company had one. You have to pay for it. I paid for it that year, but you basically like, you can build your own garden. You can build a replica of your garden in it and then tell it what you want to plan.
Yeah.
And then it'll make those fancy charts for you. Have you ever used any of those?
No, I've looked at them. I'm sure they're very easy. I mean, and they clearly must be designed to be easy, but they look complicated. And the other thing is, I don't know. I've got to have my own way of doing it, I think.
There's something about processing it. You have to like process, you have to like think about it, write it out. Like I have to write everything out, but it's a good idea to have, you know, the best what your dream garden would look like and then work back from there. I don't know. I think it's better to overplan and overthink and then just be prepared to like throw your plans up in the air if things change when you see something at the garden center you want to bring home instead.
You got to have that little bit of serendipity in there too, for sure, because that's the fun part of it. I just want to add something to what you said. And that is, I think back as I was listening to you, I think back to, you know, when I was a brand new gardener, I was a kid. I was into plants, but I didn't have that the scale or the volume anywhere close. I had a couple. I remember I went out and bought two rose bushes, and that was my whole focus for months, was learning about roses and planting the roses and pruning them and smelling them. I mean, oh my gosh, but it was just two roses. It wasn't, you know, 3,500 seedlings, you know, it was. And so there was a lot to that too, because it was allowed me to narrow down my focus and think about the roses and understand them even as an 8-year-old kid. And I got good at that without being overwhelmed, you know, and then I went on to other things. But you build on, you know, the thing about gardening is that you can do it the rest of your life and you build on what you learned the day before. I mean, I know more today than I did yesterday, and tomorrow I'm going to know more than I do today about gardening. And that's what I love about it.
Oh, it's the best. It's the lifelong hobby. I think too, with planning, you know, we talk a lot about getting stuff into the ground, right? Like you're planning for the planting. Or should you be planning things for spring, things for summer, things for fall? Like there's daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly planning tasks, right? Can you walk us through what we should be thinking about in that order? Does that make sense?
Yes. And I want to caveat this as I get into this, because, you know, it's okay to be a planter. We're talking about planning versus planting, and we're talking about the benefits of being a planner ahead of planting. But you can be a planter, and that's okay. And it's fun. It can be a little more frustrating when you're new at it, because things won't always work out the way they're supposed to as a planter without the planning. But I think it's important for you to understand why it didn't work out. So it's just kind of it's reverse engineering when you're a planter first, and then having to figure out what went wrong. When you're a planner, you usually circumvent those mistakes. But to your question, in real time, here we are, let's say it's end of March. For me, several months back, I thought about, you know, what did I want to plant outside in March, the cool season crops, where I can do that twice a year. I can do that in late winter, early spring, and then I can do it again in the fall. But for the late winter, early spring, I needed to think about what seeds was I going to grow. When did I need to plant them to allow them enough time inside so that I could plant them outside around March 1st? You just don't do that without thinking ahead to make that timing right. So timing has a lot to do with appropriate planning. And then once they're in the ground, whatever that is that you're planting, you're thinking about how long is it going to take for that thing to mature? And is it going to be a one and done? And if that's the case, am I pulling it out, which opens up that space for something else that I can put in there? And if so, what is that I'm going to put in? And will I have that plant ready to go in its place? So you're thinking ahead a lot, not just past the next plant, but then, you know, when that plant is done, what's going in its place? What time of year is it? And what plants do best at that time of year? If you like spreadsheets, you could really do a lot there. Make a list.
Or puzzles.
Or puzzles is a good one.
It's a total puzzle.
The term typically applied to that kind of planning is called succession planning or succession planting. So it's just thinking successively about what happens next beyond just that one season into the next. And depending on where you live, how much can you milk that cow for? You know, how much can you get out of that land over that time that you've got this season before you have to, call it a day and pick up your feet and chill for a while?
You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today.
Well, and I think this goes back to, you've been on the show to talk about fall gardening. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of us summer gardeners, myself included, you don't even think fall is a season you can garden in. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, my tomatoes are going to die back. And then I can put a whole bunch of lettuce or a whole bunch of, you know, sage or other awesome fall garlic, carrots, whatever. You don't even realize. But also that could be something that, you know, if this is your first garden, you don't have to do succession planting in your first garden. This is like, you know, 3-4 years down the line. For some reason, when you were talking about succession planting and having to figure out, okay, well, if that hole, then what's going to fit in that hole and the tinkering and how perfect it all needs to be. It's funny, I did a deep dive into my listener base this year, and we found out that a lot of my listeners really like to do puzzles. And I was like, wow, that's really interesting, just like as another hobby. Like, there's a lot of puzzlers in our community. I love puzzles too. But I'm like, duh, it actually is like very similar. There are similarities in like, it's kind of the same mind, garden planning and puzzles.
As you say that, I've never even made that connection, but I can totally get it as you say it. You can get lost in the day working on your puzzle. It's slow progress. And the garden is the same way, tinkering in my greenhouse or sitting in my seed starting room or just outside weeding or thinning, or next thing you know, it's like, oh my gosh, the day is gone. And it was a great day. And it's a good tired, you know? And so I get it. I need to do more puzzles.
Yeah. Me too. I wish. I'm a paint by number girl now. That's my new puzzle, but I love a good paint by number. But anyway, back to gardening mistakes. Sorry, I digress. You mentioned another big mistake that I think a lot of people make, and I personally will just own that I'm going to say that this is a gardening mistake to be wary of. However, I make it every single year, and I know I'll do it again, but overdoing it. Oh my gosh. Like my first real garden. So I had my 9-square-foot garden and then I moved to the woods. I moved to the country. It was the first time I had space. And I was like, I am going to have the biggest, most epic garden for my first time really garden. You know, like I totally went off my rocker and I got way too overwhelmed. I mean, I got lucky. I ended up gardening with a friend that year, but it's so easy when you're garden planning to take too big of a bite. And then when you're in the middle of the garden season, you're like, what did I do to myself? I mean, I know you're personally in this experience with starting seedlings. What can you say about this? Are you kind of in my boat of like, yeah, you shouldn't do it, but you're going to do it 100%?
Yeah, I don't think there's a cure. I don't think it's possible. Every year, it's funny, you can go back in the archives on my podcast and I can tell you every single year I talk about, next year I'm not going to sow so many tomatoes. I'm not going to plant so many tomatoes. I'm not going to do whatever I say I'm not going to do. And invariably, I'm right back into the thick.
Yeah, like what's the matter with us? why can't we do?
We're so ambitious. The thing about gardening is that you're so optimistic about the future and you don't think about the consequences of that in the moment. And so, go for it. Sow 3,500 seeds and talk yourself into believing that you're going to be able to do something with all of them. You're going to sell them all, or you're going to plant them all, or some combination. It's not going to happen. But you know, here's the thing about it, and we can not feel guilty about this. The stakes are very low. It's not going to break the bank if you sow twice as many seeds as you can plant. And the other thing is, there are a lot of people out there that would love to have those seedlings or whatever it is that you have left over. Whether it's a food bank from the produce or the flowers that you grow, or it's the community garden or the allotment that can use the donations of the starts. I mean, there's so school gardens. My gosh, I mean, there's so many applications for all the good that comes from your ambition.
It's interesting because gardening is also seasonal. So it's like we go through the cyclical experience of not being able to garden, which is when we overplan and overplant and, you know, over put too many seeds in a thing. Then you get into it. That's where the overwhelm happens. It makes you kind of pare back. Then the season dies back. And then you kind of go back into the same cycle. It's very interesting. It's like we should have to plan our gardens in the summer. I feel like if we had to plan our gardens in the peak of the actual garden season, I think the garden would look very different than if we had to plan it in the lull of winter, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And Mother Nature, it's just, we're put into a forced break, basically. I mean, because let's face it, unless we live in Florida, like, you know, you and your family or family, we all really don't have the luxury of being able to garden all year. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe we need that break, you know, and it charges up it recharges our batteries. And then next thing you know, we are at full peak charge, raring to go when it's time, or, you know, in the wintertime when we have cabin fever. I mean, it's amazing when you think of the way those intersections cross, you know, it's like, here we are with cabin fever and we haven't been able to garden in months and we have this pent up demand. We want to get our hands dirty. We want to get outside, but we can't yet, but we can get our hands in seed starting mix and think about gardening and look at the seed catalogs and dream about the future that is just, you know, weeks and a couple months away. So, oh God, you know, I don't know that I ever slow down, but it's just a different kind of busy in the wintertime.
Yes, totally. I feel like that wasn't good advice, but we'll move on. At least it's a disclaimer. A disclaimer that you're probably going to do too much, but also revel in it. And you know what? Sometimes I feel like too, it's like I grew way too many flowers last year because I didn't start a lot of flowers from seeds. But when I got to the garden center, I just wanted to try so many things. And yeah, not all of them made it last year, but it was so fun. And I learned a few varieties that I will double down on this year and be more intentional with this year. So I feel like, whatever.
You said what I was going to say. And, you know, it's okay if you did what you did in the moment and it was fun, you know, that's okay. I mean, So it turns out to be a little overwhelming later on, but the journey is, you got to remember you're on a journey, and that exciting time where you go to the garden center and you see all that stuff and you just get into it. That's a fun day. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Oh my God, fuchsia. I like live for my hummingbirds. All I want to do is buy flowers that my hummingbirds want to enjoy. They sure do love that fuchsia plant. So we went to kind of, that wasn't very practical. Here's a very practical mistake I see a lot of gardeners make. I make as well. Whether you start seeds and you have tiny seedlings, or you're buying a small seedling at the garden center and you're planting them, improper spacing when you set up your garden, because you want it to look good when you plant it instead of having the insight. Can you speak to that? That's always a big mistake.
And you know, this is true whether we're talking about a flower garden, a vegetable garden, or a full-blown landscape. We want instant gratification, and that's what it comes down to. And the problem is, if we apply a little bit of our knowledge or read the plant tag, hey, go figure, there's some information on that that's actually helpful, and we can be a little patient and understand in time, and it may not take much time, but in time, those plants are going to grow, and they're going to get way, way bigger than they are right now. And when you crowd plants, you're not doing yourself or the plants any favor, because plants, no matter what they are, they need light and air circulation. When you plant too compactly, you deny them both. And that leads to frustration, because that promotes pest and disease issues and lack of vigor and poor performing plants. And it's a bad user experience. It ultimately becomes very dissatisfying and it's demotivating. When all you really needed to do was trust the information. I have my pilot's license, and this just made me think of this as I said, trust the information. But one of the big things with being a pilot is the importance of redundancy and trusting your instruments. And you can be tricked into believing that you are somewhere that you're not based on what your mind is telling you based on what you see. But the information that's in those instruments is agnostic. It only knows the facts of what it's reading based on the data. It's not looking out the window, and it knows the right information. Not only that, it has a backup of that instrument in case the first one goes down. And so you're always told to trust your instruments, because your instruments will never let you down. Same thing with the information that we can apply when we're going out there and we're planting. We can think that they look better together, closer, But that's not the case. And people have been down this road for years and years before us that know better, and they write about it. And we need to trust their wisdom that's in the plant tag or online or in the book or wherever, and be a little more patient. That will serve us so much better, save us money, save us time, save us frustration, and keep us coming back empowered and equipped to be even better the following year, and encouraged and not discouraged.
Absolutely. I did a grow bag garden this year, and I planted some stuff too close out of that anxiousness to have it look nice, and ended up having to rearrange stuff in the middle of the season. And I was just like, oh, Maria, because then you're really messing up the roots of the plants that have already established. And it ended up working out, but it was definitely a lesson learned.
Plants are forgiving. We talked about, you know, once they're in the ground, they can't get up and move themselves. But if you recognize something that you need to change on that plant, whether it's moving it to a better location or trimming it or pruning it or doing something to it, they are so resilient most of the time that if you catch it early enough, and that, maybe not even that, but just know that if you see something wrong with that plant, you have time to fix it probably, usually.
Yeah, totally. Plants are so forgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Also, that makes me think of like my mom just digging her hostas up and like dividing them and separating them out all over, you know, she'll go in that garden and make one plant, take one plant and turn it into four, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In a similar vein, another mistake that a lot of people make is leaving their soil bare. So the polar opposite. So leaving too much soil exposed because they need to plant the basil plants 6 inches apart or whatever you're supposed to plant them apart. What do you do with that exposed soil? Because what can happen if that, why is that a mistake as well?
Quite a few reasons. First of all, nature abhors an empty, bare area of soil. It covers it up in nature. There's in the woods, there's nothing bare. Weeds are going to grow. First thing is, so here's why it's not good to have bare soil. Weeds love bare soil, and that's what's going to germinate automatically every time in the thousands, if not millions. And it's just a huge nightmare. So you've got the weed issue. Secondly, you've got nothing protecting that surface area. So when it rains or when you have excessive watering from your neighbor or there's whatever the runoff or the situation is, as water moves across land, it's always moving downhill. It's always seeking its lowest level. And so it's going to move across that bare soil. And that bare soil, there's nothing to hold it in place. So not only is it washing away and taking with it all the crap that's chemicals and the fertilizers and the pesticides and the oils or whatever else is moving downstream and making its way ultimately into a watershed, which is where it always goes, that's terrible. So you need something to hold that soil in place and not lose what's typically your most precious soil. It's called topsoil. And it's where, you know, a lot of the nutrients are and the microorganisms, and you don't want to lose that. So you've got the runoff, you've got the erosion, which is going to rut your soil and degrade your land. And that's because it's exposed and it's exposed. And then when it rains in a rain event, when a raindrop lands on bare soil repeatedly, I may have told you this before, but it's the equivalent to a hammer striking a nail, and it compacts the soil over time. So it's just pounding, pounding, pounding. You know, a raindrop to a grain of soil or sand or earth, it's huge. A raindrop is huge to that little bit of sand but or soil. And then so all those raindrops are just way compacting the soil. And it's saturated. You know, you don't have any buffering effect going on yet. There's no cushioning there. There's a... It just collapses the pathways in the soil where the earthworms live and the microorganisms can move, and it pushes out the air and is displaced by the water coming in that can't drain because of the compaction. So there are a few examples right there.
Yeah. So how do you mitigate this? What do you suggest?
You add mulch. The easiest thing to do is use some sort of natural mulch, which is just a covering of something such as shredded leaves or straw or hay or finely ground bark. Or grass clippings, you know, there's cardboard can be a mulch, you know, just to protect, to keep the weeds down and to kill off the bad stuff underneath it in case you wanted to add a future garden without having to till that land. The other thing you can do is a cover crop. So you can have a living mulch, also known as a green manure. And that's planting a ground cover that may be permanent, it may be temporary. You may go in there a few months later and it's called terminate it, which is basically to kill it. And then you can let it die in place, or you can turn it under, and the nutrients from all of that biomass is feeding the soil and improving it and creating drainage networks into the soil. So anything other than leaving the soil bare, whether you just apply a 2-inch, 3-inch layer of mulch, or you grow a cover crop, do something.
What do you do on the garden farm?
I mulch typically. Cover cropping is the best of all worlds because not only do you create that protective layer at the top, but then you also have those roots going down and mining up and pulling up nutrients or pulling down nitrogen from the atmosphere and leaving it in the soil with legumes, or you have repellent tendencies from certain plants. So it's more labor intensive because you are going to have to deal with it later on as you decide how you're going to terminate it. And that's always kind of a manual thing. And I found in a home garden with raised beds, it's more practical to do mulch.
Do you straw? What is the type of mulch that you like?
So my favorite mulch is shredded, semi-composted shredded leaves. So every November I collect leaves. I put them through a leaf shredder. I put them in a leaf corral, just a wire circular fence, and I let them rot down for 6 months. And then I have beautiful mulch that I put into my vegetable garden.
That's amazing. And so the thought kind of is, you know, when you put the small vegetable seedlings in, before they grow, they're going to get wide. They're going to take up that soil space. The mulch is there to kind of get the garden started, right? Because as the plants grow, you're going to need less and less mulch throughout the season, right?
You always want to have like a 2 to 3 inch layer of mulch under your plants because the mulch itself is going to do several things. It's going to keep the weeds down. So that's going to reduce the competition for water and nutrients and light. It's going to suppress those diseases that live in the soil. I talked about crop rotation earlier because there are certain diseases that live in soil, but those diseases can splash up onto the plants. But if you have a mulch layer on top, it acts as a protective layer, protective barrier to prevent those diseases from coming up. Mulch moderates the soil temperature so it can keep the soil cooler in the summer and warmer in the wintertime to protect the roots. Mulch protects the soil and keeps the water there from evaporating. So you have much better opportunity to retain the moisture, which is a huge one for mulch. And it looks really good. But the thing that I love as much as anything else about mulch is that as a natural mulch, it biodegrades over time and it's improving your soil by creating organic matter into your soil that's feeding the microbes and making your soil healthier and better. So it's a win-win-win-win-win all the way around. And it reduces the runoff too.
Yeah, the runoff too, totally. Okay, I like the leaf idea. I've tried straw before, but maybe I'll do your leaf idea this summer.
That's a big one. That's my favorite form of mulch, and it's free.
Yeah, and it probably decomposes a little easier than the straw does. So then it's just going right back into the soil, which is nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, next one. Planting too early or planting too late? Oopsies.
Yeah, we've both done that, right? And that's very common. We plant too early because we're too ambitious, we're too excited, we have too much cabin fever in the wintertime oftentimes, and we just want to get started. And then we realize that because we were successful at our seed starting, the plants are doing really well and they're growing very fast, and they're in an artificial environment and they want to get outside. They need that natural sunlight and they need that warmth, but it's too early for that because the risk of frost has not passed yet. And if we put those tender summer annuals out there in the cold, they may die. So planting too early creates problems in that you could lose your plants to cold weather. That's a big one. Planting too late is not as bad, but it can also short circuit your growing cycle in that usually that applies to crops that take longer to mature, such as tomatoes. You know, if you have a long growing season, you don't have to plant right after the risk of frost has passed. You can plant later into the summertime and still, you know, 80 days later, still have your tomatoes because it hasn't gotten cold yet. If you're in a shorter season, planting too late can be problematic because you can miss that window of opportunity for those plants that need that time before the frost or the cold weather comes to put on that tomato or that grow that head of broccoli or cauliflower or, you know, whatever it is. And so the opposite is just as true. So knowing your timing, which comes back to planning, is really important so that you don't start too early and you don't start too late.
Any recommendations for if I did start too early or if I did start too late, how to fix it?
If you start too early, what you will need to do is find a growing environment for that plant still inside, because we're assuming it's too cold, usually is the case outside, so that you give that plant chance to spread its roots. Because in that small container, whatever you have it growing in, those roots are going to keep growing, and they get to a point where they're so compacted because they have no more room to go, but they're still growing. And so they become more compact and tightly bound inside, which leads to other problems in that there's less opportunity for them to take up water, even though they have more roots. It's too compact in there for them to really get to the water, because the water is either just sitting on top or it's just not getting to the root tips to take up the water. And then you need a larger container. You need more light, because now the plant's bigger. It has greater light requirements. And so maybe your light is powerful enough that the plant underneath it is being served by the light that you have. But a lot of times we don't have grow lights that are made to really take those plants the distance. So we've got to come up with a way to maybe provide more light to the plant. And now maybe that plant has used up all its nutrients from its internal reserves that all seedlings have initially, but they eventually use them up about the time that they are appropriately ready to go outside, if you aren't too early or aren't too late. So we got to find a way to provide nutrients, which is a little bit tricky, because now you're pushing growth in an artificial environment, which isn't the way it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So that creates other problems. So it's tricky. There's definitely some downsides to starting too early.
Mm-hmm. And starting too late, is there a fix?
You can try to extend the growing season on the far end. Like, for example, if you're running out of time and your plant hasn't gone to fruit yet, or maybe it's just getting too cold, that's probably a more practical example. And when you start too late, we're dealing with probably running out of time. And when we run out of time, it's because the environmental conditions outside are no longer favorable. Like, the days are getting too short. And when that happens, plants stop growing. So if you hit the Persephone days where you have 10 hours or less of sunlight every day, plants aren't going to really grow, and they're going to kind of stop at that point. They're going to go into suspended animation. So you can't fix that unless you warm up your environment and find a way to get more light in there. And that's just not practical outside. You could, on lettuce and things like that, you could create a cold frame or change the environment so that it's warmer, and you put it in the direction of the sun to kind of capture that sun and probably help there. So there are some fixes, but they're all tricky, I guess is the word. That may not be the perfect word, but it's one. Yeah, unideal is good. Yeah.
Yeah. It might be a learn this lesson for next year and don't start too early or too late.
Yeah. What? Yeah. Timing's important.
Plant friend, the magical feeling of hearing the deep resonance of a Wind River chime in your garden is honestly incomparable to anything else I've heard. And I know that sounds insane, but they're seriously the prettiest sounding chimes I've ever heard. And you hear them singing in the wind throughout the day, and it's like this constant reminder to drop into the present moment. Billy and I have two Wind River chimes. I have one outside of my office. We have one outside of our kitchen. Throughout the day, the wind blows. The chime represents that wind. And when I hear the chime, it's this reminder to like take a deep breath and drop into myself. It's so beautiful. Plant friend, if you're looking for a new way to grow joy or mindful moments in your life, I can't recommend a Wind River chime enough for you, for your home or your garden or both. I love these chimes so much, I've gone on a little bit of a gifting rampage with them. I gifted my mother-in-law a set of wind chimes for Christmas. She loves wind chimes. They went over so well. And I also engraved the wind chime with her name on it, so it was personalized, which was a really nice touch. And I love that whenever the chime rings, she's going to be able to think of me. It's such a beautiful and joyful gift. So join me in my gifting rampage and gift a Wind River chime to your loved one, whether it's for a birthday, an anniversary, a holiday, even maybe as remembering a lost loved one. And you should use code GROWINGJOY at windriverchimes.com to get a free engraving to add a special element to your gift. They come in a variety of colors, sizes, and sounds, so head to their website, windriverchimes.com, and don't forget to use code GROWINGJOY to receive a free engraving on all Corinthian Bells wind chimes. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about five key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results. I want to hit you with a couple like fast, we're calling them garden hurdles. So they're not necessarily mistakes, but they're problems that might arise in your environment that are going to either make you not want to garden, not be able to garden, and might be a struggle that's going to impede you to kind of cross the finish line. What if I have an apartment?
Well, everybody's got a window in their apartment. So if nothing else, you can find something that's going to utilize the light in the window. Or you don't have to grow in soil and depend on sunlight. You can, like Maria, like you and I both are doing with our hydroponics or our aeroponic systems. We're just using the light provided by the system that's creating that environment for our little seedlings to grow, our seeds to sprout, our seedlings to grow. And we can have a countertop garden of herbs and vegetables and even flowers that never see the light of day. So that's something if we're in an apartment. But you know from living in New York City with your tiny little balcony, and you had 10 potted plants out there and even some cherry tomatoes and strawberries. I mean, you made it work.
And I would say arguably they were more special to me because of the small space and because of how much I needed it in the city than probably my, you know, epic garden that I have now. I will say too, like if you do live in a place where you can't garden, like growing some herbs indoors, even if you are doing it under light, is like very important. What about I have garden, I have space, but I have low light, I have shade?
So that's a good one. You're going to have to either find ways to have less shade, which would mean limiting up your plants or maybe eliminating certain ones or trees that, you know, are obstructing the most light, if that's something you could even do. I'm a tree hugger, so that's a really hard thing for me to even say, let alone do. I'm not good at that. So you look for plants that can take that environment. And if it's food, you're going to be looking for leafy crops like lettuce or spinach or kale, things that don't have to flower or fruit, but that you can eat the leaves. They tend to do much, but they're much more forgiving in lower light situations. So that's it with low light. You know, you've got to find the plants that are suitable for that.
I'll say too, man, lettuce, growing lettuce, once you grow lettuce, you can't buy it in the store anymore. I think lettuce from the taste test perspective is one of the most noticeable differences from when you grow lettuce at home versus when you buy it in the store. It's so different.
Sweeter. It's night and day. Like everything you grow in your own garden versus from the store.
Totally. I love it. We grow lettuce in our hydroponic and it's amazing. Like plucking it right off in the middle of winter is the greatest. Okay. What about if someone doesn't have a big budget for gardening? You know, everybody says the $100 tomato that they grow or whatever those memes are on social media.
It's a myth that you need really any money to garden. And I can tell you this because years ago, I took a year off and one of the things I did during that year off, I was challenged. Now, this is keeping in mind that I have every kind of a piece of equipment that you can need to garden, and I have access to everything, but I pretended one year, and I actually did this physically, I truly pretended I was a brand new gardener with no equipment and no knowledge on how to do anything. And the point was to grow a garden to feed my family of four all their vegetable needs for the entire summer and do it on less than $25. And not only did I do that, but I did it on $15.05 total for the entire for months. And we had a prolific garden. In fact, it was such an aha that the Today Show and Good Morning America have both had me on twice in the first few weeks of that project because they were so intrigued by it. And then I followed up and I lived it out. I used pizza boxes for my seed starting trays. I used cake domes for the clear tops. The only things I bought were some seed starting mix, sterile seed starting mix. And I panicked about halfway through the season because it was raining so much where I lived at the time that my tomatoes were puny. My tomato seeds were seedlings were puny. So I bought two tomato plants for $3.50 each. And that's it. That's all the money I spent. I documented it. I got to repost that somewhere on YouTube someday because it was a really good series. It proves the point that if I can do it as a brand new gardener pretending I have nothing because I borrowed tools, I got stuff at garage sales, you don't need a penny. You don't need any money.
Going back to our conversation about overdoing it, if you have a smaller budget, but maybe you do want to get a nice pot or you do want to get something, like you don't have to grow all the food you're going to eat. I think because of social media, when people hear gardening, they think homesteading. Like they don't understand that you're a gardener. If you have one basil plant, like you're a gardener. If you're growing something, you're a gardener. And it doesn't need to be this like elaborate thing. So if you have a small budget, just treat yourself to an herb garden and grow six herbs that summer and really learn how they grow and learn basic pruning skills and learn about the soil and learn about their roots and then graduate next year or just do lettuce or just do tomatoes or like just do a couple of pots or a little bed.
Because it's starting small.
Just start small, like use what you can and then just, and like also what you said earlier, you know, this is a lifelong hobby. So, you know, I giggle at myself who was like, I'm going to have the most epic garden my first year because now I think 10 years out for my garden, you know, like once you get a little bit more comfortable as a gardener, you can kind of start to see your 5-10 year plan. But yeah, like don't be afraid to start small if you have a small budget too, I feel like. But I mean, that's wildly impressive that you did that for under $25. It's incredible.
One of the biggest hurdles is overwhelm. We can just feel overwhelmed too quickly because we get enthusiastic. We don't know what we don't know. And so we just dive in full head, both feet. I mean, we are in, all in. And so we don't understand that that little pack of seeds of 30 tomato seeds can overtake your garden or whatever it is. Give things the right conditions, they're going to grow phenomenally well to the point of overwhelm because you're going to need to take care of it. And if you weren't banking on that or you didn't know that was coming, it can be daunting. It can be an experience that kind of turns you away rather than excites you because these plants need some of your attention and you may not have the time to do it. And if you don't have that time, it even gets exponentially worse because the plants keep growing, but now they become even more of a project. And so overwhelm is big. And so my suggestion always, always, always is to start slow and add on as you go. It's much easier to expand rather than to undo.
Totally. I wrote weed overwhelm too. I feel like let's just dive in, especially with the overwhelm. Yes, the 30 tomato plants can be very overwhelming, but also just like the weeding can really get on top of you.
Let me tell you, that is so real.
Any tips for avoiding specifically weed overwhelm? Because if you're going to have a garden, you're going to have weeds. How would you recommend people staying on top of that?
Mulch. We talked about mulch. If you wanted to make one case for mulch, it would be to vastly cut down on the amount of weeds that you have because weeds need light to germinate in most cases. And if you block the light to the soil surface, the weeds aren't going to germinate. The other thing is, don't disturb your soil surface because if you do, you're going to turn up the millions of seeds laying dormant just underneath that surface because they can't get to the light. But when you turn up or till or whatever you do to the soil and expose all those seeds, now you're going to be overwhelmed with weeds. By covering it with mulch 2 to 3 inches, you block the light. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to have weeds. You're just going to have a large percentage less with mulch. Next, because I am a big mulcher and I still have weeds, especially in the areas that don't have as much mulch, you need to stay on top of it because that will be the first thing that will get you overwhelmed more than anything else. Those weeds are opportunistic. They're going to find a way to grow and they're not going away. So my trick to this is to block out time, schedule it, do it first thing in the summertime. For me, one of my favorite things, this may sound weird, but is to, as the sun is coming up, I get outside while it's quiet and the birds are singing, and I'm out there with my AirPods and I'm listening to a podcast, and I set my timer for an hour and I weed, and I literally look forward to it. And then it becomes a habit and a routine that you actually like, because it's cool and it's pleasant outside and you accomplish something. But the reason why it works, you set parameters around it. You set a time limit or you set boundaries. If it's not a time limit, you put a line in the garden pathway or the bed or wherever you need to go to with a string or a paint or whatever. And when you get to that point, you stop. Even if you could go further, get up. I mean, you've done your job. It's very fulfilling to know that you're making progress. And setting those boundaries is freeing and it's less daunting because you know there's an end point. And then you come back the next day. But you need to stick with that. And then it's not a bad thing.
I think weeding is like the best mindfulness practice in the garden. When I gardened with my friend Melody, she used to say, I weeded with joyful fury. I loved it. Like, it feels so good. And you get, it's that mind-body
instant gratification
connection.
Too.
Instant gratification, mind-body connection. I would take like a before and an after picture of the, you know, just for myself. I didn't even post it on social media, but it felt so good. And you think about, you know, the bad thoughts in your mind that you should be, you know, weeding out. And all of a sudden, I'm going to talk about plant life pillows. But anyway, what I think is also, you know, looking back on my, you know, four garden seasons too, I think, I don't want to say a mistake, but I think the way that you can set yourself up for success in the garden also is knowing what you're doing and having good education.
Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about five key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about five key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.
When we had you on last month for the seed starting episode, I say, like, I went back to your seed starting class every single year because I took something new away every single year from it. I've taken your vegetable gardening course. I've read your book, but I'm so excited about this new course that you're launching. And you're launching it this week, perfectly in tune, in time for the season. So for people who want support this year in their gardening journey, tell us about OVG.
Organic vegetable gardening is a, I want to say, massive project, and it has been a massive project to create it, to produce it, to film it, to document it, to write it, to create the lessons in it, because we wanted this to be the best of its kind out there. And I know that it is, because there isn't anything like it out there anyway. And I keep raising the bar on myself, and this is something that I've always wanted to do. And the reason I've wanted to do this course is that my first television hosting role was on DIY Network, and it was on an episode called Fresh from the Garden. And each episode is on a television series called Fresh from the Garden. And each episode was teaching people how to grow one particular crop from seed to harvest. So the entire episode tracked me through the season. Let's pick tomatoes, putting the seed in the ground or growing the seedling from start, mid-season care, along the way, mulching it, whatever you needed to know about those tomatoes, all the way through harvest, and sometimes even beyond that to storage. But it walked people through in real time, seeing how to grow that particular crop or that vegetable or that fruit. And it was only going to be 26 episodes over a year, and it turned into 3 years and 52 episodes. And it was powerful. But I was the host, not the writer. They consulted with me along the way, but mostly I was saying what somebody else wrote. So it wasn't my words really, and how I really wanted to do it until this year, when I knew when that show retired, someday I was going to recreate it my way and my garden the way that I would normally do it. And so doing it organically is different. I know a lot that I never was able to really convey in those shows. I don't have the constraints that I had in those shows. And so it's real time. It's casual. It's intimate. It's almost as if the way I wanted to envision this with the viewer or the student was that they felt like they were hanging out with me in the garden, just me and them, one-on-one in my garden. I'm showing them how to do everything, make that plant successful, not only with that one, but for the 40 warm and cool season crops that we featured. On top of all the geeky information that you should know about watering, composting, soil, pest and disease management, so on and so forth. So it's a big deal, but you take it at your own pace. It's not like you have to sit there and feel overwhelmed that you've got all this stuff you've got to get through. It's lifetime access, and it's self-paced, and it's there for you, and we continue to add to it. So it's pretty awesome.
I think that's very important. You can piecemeal it, right? Say you only want to do tomatoes this year. You could just do that this year, and then next year you could go back and look at corn. And you offer coaching in it too, right? You have office hours.
We have office hours, and not only do we have office hours where I'm there answering your questions in real time on a live Zoom call, multiple times a month. Like usually it's probably every other week, because we're also having the top experts in their field in all the major categories that you need to know about organic gardening coming on board for live exclusive conversations as well, for only the students. So these are people that I have access to that I've never done public conversations with for Zoom, so on a podcast or anything like that. But we're pulling out all the stops with these folks. And I'm paying them an honorarium, of course, for their valuable time to come on with me and my students to teach them the stuff from the people that know it the best. That's super special, and I'm really excited about that. But we got a world-class lineup of people like that, and we'll continue to add more people throughout the year and in the years to come for that.
Can you walk us through like what one module would be?
Well, one module, let's just say the one that's on insect pest, in the garden. it's helping, first of all, people understand that of all the bugs identified in the world, which is roughly a million, only 1% are technically considered pests. So that's important to know so that you don't automatically assume that you need to go out and kill a bug in your garden because you think it's going to eat your garden away. It's not. It has a preferred diet, and there are many natural predators of that pest that Mother Nature has put on this planet to take them out for you. There are many environmentally friendly controls that we can apply if necessary as a last resort to manage that situation. So we teach you what are those options, what are the beneficial insects, what can you plant in your garden to deter pests or to even prevent them from coming in, or send them to plants that would be decoy or trap crops. You know, it's just a wealth of information, and that's just on one subset of the course module information that we have on all the main topics. Soil science is another big one. If you want to have a healthy garden, you want to have healthy soil, because you won't have a healthy garden without healthy soil. But how do you have healthy soil? I teach you that in great detail without it being overwhelming or too over your head, but it's information that somebody that's serious about being a good gardener needs to know. And that's the kind of information I want you to know.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, a bigger part of this gardening conversation is organic and sustainable. And I know those are two things that you're very passionate about, which I'm sure will be reflected in the course. But I also love, so will there be like a module on tomatoes, a module on like each of these plants?
Yes. All the top crops that you're likely to grow in your vegetable garden for warm and cool season are going to be featured. And so we've managed to get through probably about 30 of the 40 that we want to include early on. But keep in mind that we filmed this in my garden all through this past year. And it's a huge undertaking to be on top of everything when something's happening simultaneously with other things, and you're trying to get it all in when you just can't because you have weather delays and you have construction noise and you have anything under the sun that you can imagine that gets in your way and challenges you to get that done. So we call this the beta year because it's not totally complete yet and it's not totally perfect. Maybe it never will be, but we have a lot of plans to add more things to it that, you know, you just can't get done. Rome wasn't built in a day and our course wasn't completely finished in a year.
No, totally. But that is like, I hate that when I go on YouTube and I Google, you know, I tried a Three Sisters garden this year for the first time. So I loved Braiding Sweetgrass. I read it like four times this year and I wanted to try the Three Sisters. So I watched a bunch of YouTube videos on planting up a Three Sisters garden. But when you watch those YouTube videos, they're only in one, here's how to plant it up or here's how to harvest.
They don't come back.
But they don't come back to it. And I grew one ear of corn this summer, but hey, it was one really good ear of corn. And you really can't do a Three Sisters bat. You can't do it in a grow bag. You just can't do it.
No. One of the things I really looked forward to with this course was just what you said. I don't know that I've ever really seen anybody document the entire grow period of anything. Imagine watching me put tomato seeds in the ground or seedlings in the ground when they're this big. And you were revisiting that spot, watching them grow, watching me deal with the challenges, watching me harvest the tomatoes from what you saw me plant 4 months earlier. And that's with every crop in the garden.
With every crop. And so, because you're launching this, it's only $497, which is crazy. And you're offering $100 off in the launch week, which is crazy. Talk to us about that.
I struggle with it because my team, they know how much we've been working on this project and for how long and how many people we've involved in it and how many people have been pouring their lives into it and the detail and the amount of information that's in it. You know, we initially batted around a price that was much, much higher.
I knew that price because I've been speaking to you guys about this and I was like, oh, okay, this is that price. And then you came back to me and you're offering it way lower than what you originally thought. And I think that speaks a lot to you as a human.
I want this to be accessible. And even that, you know, we're going to get people are going to complain about that, but it's only because they don't know yet what's in the course. Anybody that challenges that tuition fee for what's coming just isn't educated as to what's in it. And it's not their fault. This is human nature, you know? More often than not, Maria, and you probably recognize this too, is that we often hear that people would have gladly paid more than what we charge for tuition for pretty much every course we've ever done. And this is going to be that course in spades because I had to sell everybody on my team that I didn't feel comfortable making it unattainable for the masses, you know, because I know that we could price it out of many people's budgets. And then this year, Maria, something that we've never done before to make it even more accessible, we're offering a monthly payment plan. just makes it a more of a doable option for those that could swing it on a monthly basis, but maybe not fork over $497 or $397 all at once.
Plus, you are kindly offering 20% off to our listener community. So if people are interested in taking this class, you can go to the link in the show notes for OVG and then use code GROW20, GROW20 at checkout for 20% off. But you're only offering this through April 4th. So you have the first week our community can get 20% off.
This is a one-time offer for that. I mean, this sounds salesy, but I'm just telling you, when this comes back around next year, it's not even going to be close to that.
With testimonials. Yeah, totally. And also, Joe, just because I know, you know, just to close this episode out, you know, you just got your greenhouse, you're filled to the brim with your greenhouse. You're coming back. You know, I know you really had to hustle last summer because you were filming all of the content this year. What are you most excited about for your gardening season this year? After the launch, you know, after you've got everybody enrolled and you can actually just like turn your attention outwards onto your garden again, like what are you most looking forward to?
I am looking forward to, it's funny, we're talking about it, not overwhelming myself with planting more tomatoes than I did last year, which I always say every year. But this year, I think I'm really going to kind of not do it. Mark my words and we'll see. But I'm looking forward, Maria, to now taking the information that is going to be in the course because we documented it all last year. And now with my students that will be in this course, working with them and showing them in real time, revisiting those gardens or those crops in a new year and a new season and adding and building on the information that was initially created with new stuff that just wasn't out there for us to talk to about or show them because it's a new year and a different season. And with new time, you have new things happening and continuing to build and teach. And that is the other thing about all our courses in the Online Gardening Academy. The lifetime access gives you that. And literally it's free because you've already paid your tuition one time and that's all we ever ask of you. But we continue to deliver more and more and more into the course.
Yeah, I know. I get that benefit for those courses. You know, like I said, I've gone back to your seed starting class every year and I learn something new every year because let's be honest, like all of these courses that you put together, like you said, they're really rich in information. And I don't think one person is going to be able to absorb 100% of the information that you teach in one sitting. I think the lifetime access is actually probably the most valuable part of it. Not even the information, because you need to be in different headspaces. You need to have different curiosities to be able to really absorb everything you're throwing at us.
There's stuff in that course that you don't even know that you need to know. Like you don't know what you don't know, but it's there. You will be glad that it's there next year and you don't even realize it today. You know, it's like crazy.
I love it. Well, I love it. I love you. I'm so excited for OVG. Go check out the course with my link in the show notes, Plant Friends. Joe, where can everyone find you and follow the greenhouse and the garden farm and everything? Where can everyone find you?
I spend most of my social media time on Instagram when I'm posting. So at Joe Gardener on Instagram and joegardener.com for everything else there. You know, we've got YouTube channels and things that you can find. Yeah, Joe Gardener is kind of the main brand and that will usually lead you to where you want to go if you Google that.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks. Hopefully you'll be back soon. It's been lovely chatting again.
Thank you, Maria, and I'll talk to you soon, no doubt.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe Lample. I love that he was on like a month ago or 2 months ago. I want him to just be a recurring guest on Growing Joy because he's so great. He's my friend and my teacher. So it's very interesting to interview him and like fangirl, even though he's my friend. But anyway, I'm so proud of him. And this organic vegetable gardening course is insane, Plant Friends. I mean, you just heard him talk about it himself, but it is the most comprehensive gardening course on the market. I can't believe it takes you through the life cycle of all of these different plants. I'm so freaking excited to take it. And so if you're interested in taking it with me, April 4th is the deadline to use my coupon code so you can get 20% off at checkout. It's a little bit more of a premium cost than his other courses because it's so expansive, but it's so ridiculously cheap for the amount of information he's giving you. But you can use GROW20, GROW20 at checkout for 20% off. This is the introductory price with lifetime access. It's the lowest this course will ever be. And for the first year, he's offering two different ways to pay. Like he mentioned, you can pay monthly or you can save 30% by paying in full. I've left the link to the course in the show notes. You can click it or you can use the code GROW20 at checkout. Thank you again to our episode sponsors. I know Wind River is one of the sponsors of today's episode. And as it's been snowing, I do this beautiful little meditation practice in the morning where I go and sit under the wind chime. If you follow me on Instagram, you see it was snowing. It was like crazy snow. And I bundled myself up in my robe and a bunch of blankets and I sat under the wind chime and the snow was blowing on my face. It was so magical. But man, these wind chimes have seriously like changed Billy and my experience of our home. It's so nice to have music playing in the background always. And I'm loving my Territorial Seed Company kitchen counter line. I'm watching these tiny tomato plants. They're 6 inches tall, plant friends. They're crazy. They're tiny and they've got like 10 or 20 flowers and I'm watching them grow into tomatoes. I'm so excited to see where they go. As we are at the end of March and we are moving into the garden season, I know we're all so excited to get growing and get gardening. Give yourself the last couple moments of winter. You know, if you need some dormancy, if you need some quiet, I've really been trying to lean into living alongside the moon and its lunar cycles and also the seasons and letting myself get quiet in the winter, you know, letting myself do less in the winter and be covered in a figurative, you know, 2 feet of snow. And I'm excited about the growing season. My birthday's in April, so that'll be fun. But I'm also just like trying to keep my feet on the ground in the last couple of weeks of winter. So with that, I hope this episode was helpful. Let me know your gardening mistakes and the lessons that you've learned from them on social media. We'll be promoting this episode on social media so you can go comment on the posts associated with the show. And until next time, my sweet plant friends, I hope you keep blooming and keep growing joy.
Plant friend, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure that you're subscribed to the show so you don't miss an episode. We have incredible episodes lined up in 2023, and I don't want you to miss one topic. And while you're subscribing, would you mind clicking over to the review section and leaving us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so I thank you in advance for helping this podcast reach as many planty earbuds as possible across the globe. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got a ton of free options for you. First, there's the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's so fun. It takes literally 3 minutes to complete. You take the test, you get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you, inspired by your results. The link is in the show notes. Make sure to let me know what your personality is after you take the test. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, check out my website. We've got a bunch of free guides that you can download on topics like understanding natural light, which is actually a 3-day worksheet, and 9 ways to green up your office if you need to bring a little bit of planty joy into your work life. And finally, I want to invite you to join the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet, my online garden society. It's both a web platform and an iOS and Android app. It allows our listeners to get together in an algorithm and troll-free online space to swap plant care tips, humble brag about plant wins, and get support when you have plant fails. We have monthly live planty show and tells on Zoom, which are so fun, and even have a living library of planty book recommendations sourced from our community. You can go to jointhegardensociety.com to grab your membership. And for anything else, plant friend, I am here for you. Feel free to drop me a line, whether you have an idea for an episode, an event, or maybe you're even a planty business interested in sponsoring the show. And of course, following me on Instagram and TikTok for daily planty silliness, musings, and tips is always recommended. You can find me across socials at Growing Joy with Maria. Thank you again so much for listening. It is truly my honor and life's delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.
Plant care is self-care on Growing Joy, the podcast.
Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.